3, and we're in this section beginning in verse 18. We're talking about households, okay, and basically relationships within households. Now, if you look at this text, you're going to see some things in here where you might not typically think, oh, wait a minute, households including slaves and masters? Well, yeah, we're going to talk about that difficult, we're going to have that difficult discussion, but we need to understand the context in which Paul is writing this. Okay? So, in the first century, households consisted of what kind of relationships? When you talk about a family household that was there, who was included in those families or in those households? You had husbands and wives, right? You had moms and dads and brothers and sisters, and you also had slaves and masters. Okay, and they were part of the household. Slaves that belong to someone, by definition, a slave is owned by someone. Okay, they were part of what was considered at that time to be part of the household. Okay, now, notice and understand, who is Paul writing this letter to? Christians. All right, so right off the top of our head, we would say, well, if he's writing to Christians, why does he have stuff in here about slaves and masters? Okay. So we need to understand, again, the context that Paul was writing in, and then we need to try to look at it and see, well, how does that apply to us today? Okay, what are the principles here that we need to take from this? So, in beginning in verse 18, he starts out by saying, wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Okay? Now, you go over to Ephesians chapter 5, and what does he tell us there? Okay, beginning in verse 21, he says, submit yourselves one to another. That's everybody, right? And then in verse 22, what does he say? Wives, submit to your husbands. Why? How does he say? Somebody turn over there. Ephesians 5, verse 22. What does he say? For the husband is what? The head of the wife. Just as Christ is the head of the church and gave himself up for it, right? So in the same way, what? In the same way as, what does it say there? The church submits to Christ, so also wives must submit to their husbands. Now, what's the word there that we have problems with? Submit. Okay? Submit. That's a difficulty for us, isn't it? First of all, it's difficult for all of us just to this whole idea of submitting to someone else. In our society and culture today, that concept is not very popular. Okay? And what would you say, what's your idea or thoughts on why that is so?
The feminist movement.
Okay? The feminist movement is certainly part of it. I'm not talking just about the wives part. I'm just talking about the whole idea of submitting to one another.
Lack of
control. Okay? Lack of control is certainly one. Okay?
It's all about me,
which places me where? I'm on top. I'm the most important. Everybody else should be what? Submitting to me. And this whole idea of us submitting to other people just goes counter to that concept. And that's the society that we live in. So when people read this today, and like I, you know, this was part of the wedding ceremony we did yesterday, and you know, I couldn't help but notice a couple of folks out there in the audience as I was reading that seemed to be kind of squirming a little bit. You know, we just don't like this idea. And okay, now let's talk about wives submitting to their husbands. Okay? Again, not a very popular idea today, is it? Again, the feminist movement, no, women don't need to be submitting to any men. In fact, we've gone to the point where what's happening in our culture and society as it pertains to men and women. Yeah. Have you heard the term, if you were here Wednesday night, you heard me read an article, have you heard the term toxic masculinity? Okay? And basically what that's all about is that men need to stop being men and they need to conform more to the whole idea of being a lot more softer and delicate, kind of like women and because men in their basic form, well, we're just misogynistic and we're, power hungry and we're abusive and we're just by virtue of being a man. That's what our culture is telling us today. And so why would a woman submit to that, to any man, if that's the way all men are? And that's the message that our culture right now is putting out there. Okay. Now, is it true that there are some men who, have problems all along those lines? Absolutely. No question about it. But to say that that identifies all men that way? No. No. It's just like the same kind of judgments that we make. We have people that don't like policemen. Why? Because, there's some bad cops out there, and there are. Okay, but that doesn't mean all cops are bad. How many of you ever kind of felt like your doctor wasn't any good? Okay, yeah, all right. So does that mean all doctors are no good? You see the point that we can have bad experience with one, group of people or what have you, and then that basically identify everyone that fits in that group as the same way. And that's not right.
See? I think it's for the majority of the people, it's a cop-out.
Oh, yeah.
They just don't want to submit. And then for Christians that have a problem with this, if you can't submit to your husband, how can you submit to Christ?
Exactly. So, okay, all right, to be fair, before we go on any further, I know there's probably one bad preacher out there somewhere. Right? No, but the reality is that in anything, any group of people, any profession, anything, you're going to find some that are bad. But that doesn't identify the whole population. Okay? So it doesn't, therefore, also does not identify the whole population of women when we say, well, we got this feminist movement going on, and so women don't want to submit. Okay, a lot don't, but there are still many that do. So we have to be real careful not to just kind of lump everybody together and say this applies to everybody equally, because it doesn't. And as Christians, hang with me one second, Ray. As Christians, what's our responsibility?
To stand out,
to be different. If we conform to the world, to the patterns of the world, as Paul warns us not to in Romans 12, too, right? Then we're no different than the world. And how can we allow our light to shine if we're going to behave like the world behaves? You see? Ray? Yeah.
None of my brothers beat on women. None of them.
Yeah, you do better, exactly. And not everybody...
allow yourself to get caught up in the world.
Yeah.
Because this stuff about men, I mean, now there are some women who can abuse men. Mm-hmm. Even going far as fighting. Mm-hmm. But that's not the norm.
Right.
But I really feel concerned about men doing what God expects of us, especially Christians.
Exactly. Exactly.
We are a peculiar people. We don't act different. And if we don't, we're no better than Satan himself.
Well, again, as I said a moment ago, we've got to let our light shine so that people can see. They see that difference in us, and it draws them to Christ. If they don't see any difference, then what's the point? Okay. So, you know, when he's telling wives, be submissive to your husbands, both here and, again, more extensively wording over in Ephesians 5, you know, wives, how should you be responding to that as Christian wives? Remember, you know, we saw earlier in chapter 3, verse 1 and 2, since you have been raised with Christ, and these are the instructions, okay? Since you've been raised with Christ, wives, submit to your husbands. Okay, Chuck, before we move on, you had a hand up? Just a wife,
married,
a Christian wife, right.
So they want to be a Christian wife. Yeah. You know, and so that, I think, again, it's a matter of changing their heart and their attitude.
Right.
That even I need myself to be standing back.
Right.
I need to be a good
Christian husband. Right. Yeah.
And then if the women within the church at large would have obviously the same attitude and desire. So I want to be a good Christian wife. Not to please my husband, he would receive the benefit, but to please the Lord.
Please God. We're going to see that statement in here in just a moment. Absolutely. What's our motivation behind it all? Okay. So wives need to submit to their husbands. And then what does he say here? Husbands, love your wives. And here he just simply says, do not be harsh with them. Okay. But again, go over to Ephesians chapter 5, and what does he say there? Husbands, love your wives how? As Christ loved the church
and gave himself
up for her. Okay? So that's how we can know, by the way, that this isn't about power. It's not about the husband, you know, being the king of his castle and saying, woman, fetch me my slippers, woman, get my meal, woman, you know. That's not what it's about. Okay? It is about a husband dying to himself, loving his wife so much that he dies to himself. So that takes the selfishness out of the equation. All right? So he died to himself. He gave up himself. Christ did. Why? For the church. And what does it say there? To sanctify her, cleansing her with the washing of water through the word, right? That he might present himself to her, or that she might present himself to him as what kind of church? What does it say there? A radiant church without spot or blemish or any other defect. Okay. Wow. Husbands, to love your wife that way. Okay? What a relationship. What about the children? Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not embitter your children, for they will become discouraged. What does he say over in Ephesians chapter 6, beginning in verse 1? Fathers, do not exasperate your children. What does that mean? Same thing does here. Embitter or discourage them, right? But bring them up how? In the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Okay? In other words, teach them to know God. I've had parents tell me, a couple of different parents, and I was just kind of like, you know, how do you respond to that? Say, well, I'm not gonna influence my children religiously. I'm gonna wait until they can grow up and make their own decision and what they want to do and go into church and so forth. And these are people who are supposed to be Christian. I point this out to them and say, no. If you wait until they're old enough to make their own decision, that's too late. You need to teach them the ways of the Lord. Now, they need to make their decision later on as to whether they're going to accept and they're going to follow and all those things, but you need to teach them to know the Lord. Okay. Because that's what God calls upon us as parents to do. Okay, I got two hands up over here. Yeah.
That is something that cannot be relegated to somebody else.
Right.
You, as a parent, are responsible.
Yes.
You can get help, obviously, from the congregation, the classes that are made available,
right.
The retreats, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, the parents have and always will be responsible.
Yes. Yes. And if you rely just simply on Sunday morning Bible class and Wednesday evening Bible class or the religious training of your children, then you're neglecting the role that you have to teach the children. Okay. All right. Judy and then Lynette.
I was just going to say, we can't expect our children to make the right choices when they're grown up if we don't expose them to the Lord so they get to know Him and then make a good decision when they get older.
Yeah.
And I want to add to what you're saying. Bring your children to Bible class. I think it's so less important for them to be taught the Word of God compared to being in public schools. Yeah. This is, if we look at it, really even more important for them to be exposed to. Because this will shape them as they grow older.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, unfortunately, so often what happens is we place more emphasis on their secular education than we do religious education because, you know, they don't want to come to Bible class. And, well, okay, you know, I'll let them sleep, whatever. But how many of us would allow our kids not to go to school? Or even to be late for school? You see, and not to do their homework and things of that nature. And so here's the real key. What's the message that we're giving to our children? You know, we are teaching them things, okay? And what's the message that we're giving to them when we put that emphasis on secular education and not on their religious education or relationship with God?
You know? The things of the world are
more important. Yeah. Yes.
Whether we mean to or not, we are going to.
We're teaching them something.
By the things we do, the things that we say, the example that we set, we teach them every day. It's not always the lesson that we
intend for. Yeah. We have to pay attention to that because we're teaching them something. And sometimes the things we're teaching them are not what we need to be and even know that we're doing. So we need to be teaching them actively about God. Yeah. Ray?
Understand that in my opinion, we as parents, we have there to do what they need to do. Sometimes, I'm not saying they work, but there are some of us, those who work. I know I can't walk. My mama had everything lined up for us to do, and we had just do it. At that time, it was three boys. My mother, we had a younger brother came along. So we had to help take care of him. We had responsibility to take care of that house.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother was very simple. You don't know what I'm going to use.
Yeah.
But anyway, very, very important. But there's nothing more important than God's word to raise them. And we raise our children for them in the church, for them up in the church. And that's all we can do.
Yeah. Well, when we have that responsibility, we can't just let kids, you know, raise themselves. And unfortunately, it's not just absentee parents, but it's also parents that have kids. They are with them, but they're allowing the kids to run the home because they don't want to get the kids mad at them, or, you know, they want to be friends with them rather than parents and all those kinds of things. And that teaches, again, the wrong lessons. Beverly? Oh, I'm sorry. We never did get back to you, did we? I'm sorry, Lynette.
Yeah, I'm forgettable. I find it interesting in Ephesians 6:4 that the sentence starts with fathers.
Right.
Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And how many times do you see that fall back onto
the mother? Yeah, exactly.
Or, like you said, somebody else.
Yeah, and, you know, there's another thing here that we have to understand, okay? This is how God designed it to be, all right? This is His instructions. This is how I want you as Christians to be living. Since now you have been raised with Christ, this is what you need to be doing, okay? So one of the things we've got to take away from this is, whether we're husbands, whether we're wives, whether we're parents, whether we're children, God is going to hold us accountable for our role that He's given to us. Okay? So if we abdicate that, we, you know, as fathers, we say, oh, let the mom take care of it, you know. Well, God is still going to hold those fathers responsible for their obligation, their job that He's given to them. In the same way with mothers and wives and husbands, He's going to hold us accountable to Him for whether or not we followed what He told us to do. Okay, so we don't get off by going, oh, well, you know, she's taking care of it. I don't need to worry about it as a husband and father. No. God did not give you permission to do that, you see. He's the one that sets the rules. Why? Because it's His church. Okay? All right, I got hands up over here. I got a hand here, and I got another hand here, and I think I saw another one somewhere.
I was just going to say
that. I won't.
The mother is more with the children than the father is.
Right.
So therefore, she has a lot greater opportunity to teach the children while she's with them. I go back to Timothy. He was taught at the feet of his mother and grandmother.
Right.
Okay. But the father can reinforce
exactly
what the mother has already taught these children.
Exactly. Yeah, and I don't think that Paul's intention here is that everything the child learns needs to be taught by his father.
Exactly.
The issue here is the father needs to make sure it's being done.
Right.
Okay? As the head of the household, God's going to hold him accountable to make sure that those things were done that need to be done.
Yes.
And he can't say, well, but I gave it to my wife to do. No. God will say, I gave it to you to do to make sure that it was being done.
Amen.
You see? Brian, you had your hand up?
To me, it's back to what we said in the class, the whole culture, to me, being coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much effort to take care of children.
Yeah.
Going that way, just look at New York. They're willing to abort a baby all the way up to birth.
Yeah.
And because they want to be able to pop out.
Right.
To not be able to do what they're responsible for. To be a Christian takes work. To be a parent, yes, it takes work. Yes. This culture in this world today, even the older cultures, not just the younger ones, don't want to make the effort.
Yeah.
Because it's all about
it. Yeah, it's too much effort. Okay. All right, let's move on here to the next part here. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you and to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Okay, so again, we go back to that whole issue of, wait a minute, he's writing this letter to Christians, and he's addressing slaves. And then there's also those issues of where he's addressing masters. Well, but wait a minute, if you're a Christian and you're a master, doesn't that mean you own slaves? And shouldn't you get rid of those slaves? And shouldn't that be what Paul is saying? Well, you know, here's an interesting thing. Most likely, it was Onesimus, the slave of Philemon, who delivered this message to the church in Colossae after giving it by the hand of Paul. Okay? So, some insight into that, go over and read the letter that Paul wrote to Philemon. Okay? Who was what? A slave owner. So what do we need to take from this? That wait a minute, you mean Christians own slaves? And God wasn't condemning that? No, he wasn't. Why? Well, my take on it is because that was the culture of the time. That's the way people did life. Slavery was a part of just about every culture throughout history. Okay? Now, that does not mean that it was right. Okay? It doesn't mean that slavery is an okay thing. I don't want anybody to think I'm saying that. All right? But what it does mean is that's the harsh reality of humanity. Okay? And so what God has done in His Word is said, okay, we have that situation going on. Here's how. If you're a slave, you need to behave. And if you're a master, you need to behave. Okay? And again, the overall message of that is we need to be different from the way the world is behaving along that line. Okay? Does everybody understand that? So again, it's not God's not giving approval of slavery in any of these. God is recognizing that that's the decision that men have made and how they're going to treat one another. It's very similar to the instructions that Jesus gave in Matthew chapter 19 when he was asked about the whole question of divorce. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason? Okay? Well, what was his response there? Moses, what? Because your hearts were hard, commanded you to give a decree of divorce. Notice the very next thing that he says. But it was not so from the beginning. In other words, that is not God's intention. But because men's hearts were hard, he gave instruction on how, if they're going to insist on doing this, this is how it must be done amongst his people. And this situation with slavery, it falls under the very same kind of category. God does not approve of it, but because men's hearts are hard in the way they're going to treat one another, he says, here's how you need to make sure you're behaving. And if it's not different from the way the world is doing it, then you got a problem. Okay? So we need to understand these statements in that kind of a way. That no, God does not approve of that. But God never, throughout history, God has never come down and fixed every wrong that man has come up with. Right? But God has instructed His people concerning those things on how they are to conduct themselves. Same thing with worship. A lot of idol worship in the world, okay? It was back then, still is today. But you don't see God coming down and stopping all of that bad stuff. What He does is He instructs His people and says, don't do it. Okay? So that's what we need to understand from this, okay? Brian, you had your hand up a moment ago?
Yes,
and that's what we're, part of what we're getting ready to find out here, okay? Judy?
And also, I think when you go back and read about it, a lot of slaves were indentured slaves.
Right.
They willingly went in to be a slave, whether to pay a debt or whatever it was.
Right.
And there's also a degree in the Bible where it says they are not to be kept any longer than
right.
like 6 years. On the seventh
right.
year, they are
you have to set them free, right.
And if they don't want to go, then you pierce their ears.
Right. You nail their ear to the door.
In an outward sign that they willingly remain
right.
with their master.
Yeah. So again, God gave certain instructions as to how these things are to be done. And so, and He expects His people to do things, those things, the way He says to do them. So now that then comes down to, okay, we're going to do this, but what is our attitude supposed to be while we're doing it? Well, look at what He says next here. Okay? Verse 23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for who?
For the Lord.
For the Lord, not for men. Okay? Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. Brian, what was it you just said a moment ago?
We all serve
someone. And Paul here says, it is the Lord Christ you are serving. Okay? So, in whatever capacity somebody is in, how do we need to approach that? See? He says, you need to work at it, do whatever it is you're doing, you work at it with all your heart. You put everything into it. But you do it not as serving men, but recognizing that what you're doing is you're serving the Lord here. See? You're serving the Lord. You need to recognize it as such. Chuck?
I consider that principle, you know, it's written to the Christians of long ago, that principle still applies to you.
Absolutely. And we have to have that attitude because, you know, there are going to be times in our lives, and I'm sure that probably most of you in here can look at different circumstances, situations you found yourself in and going, if I had my druthers, I'd rather be, you know, doing this. Well, do we recognize, though, that maybe the reason you are where you are right now is because that's where God wants you to be for whatever His purpose is? And so, yes, this applies. God's got you doing this right now, in this place at this time. You don't want to be there? You need to do it, work at it with all your heart, and recognize you're serving the Lord, not men. You see? Chuck? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's take a look at this for a moment here and say, okay, well, but thankfully, you know, at least in America, we've abolished slavery and, you know, and all that kind of stuff, although there's still a lot of folks who are under the bonds of slavery and servanthood in a lot of different capacities in this country, okay? But generally speaking, you know, the slavery that we had in America as its founding and, you know, and so forth, you know, we go, okay, well, that's gone. But do we still have, and does this apply to job situations? In other words, whether you're an employee or an employer, whether you're a boss or a worker bee, Does not these same principles apply? You see? Now, some people would say if you're in the military, you're still slavery because the military owns you and you got to do whatever they tell you to do. Right, Dale? Right? You see? Not the same thing, but in principle it is, isn't it? Your employer, you want to work for this employer, and he says, I want you to do this, and you go, I won't do that. You know. Well, if you're going to work for me, you do. Okay. And you refuse to do it, then pack your bags and get out. Okay. But again, we have a problem in the culture where yeah, that's not easy to do anymore because now you got to do all this paperwork to prove that the person you gave them all this opportunity and you know, you trained them and you did all these efforts to try to make sure that you know, before you fire them. As far as Christians concerned, those issues should never even come up. Shouldn't come up. But again, we look at it and go, well, you know, it's about me. I don't want to do that. I don't like that. Get somebody else to do it. I was hired first. I've been here longer than them. Make them sweep the floor or whatever. Okay. He says, whatever you do, you work at it. How? With all of your heart. And you do it as working for the Lord, not for men. Dale? Exactly.
The Lord wants us to always set the best example so that people say, you know, it's great having Christians as employees.
Yeah.
Or it's great having Christians as citizens. He's told them to pay their taxes.
Yeah.
You know, he wants us to conform to the standards as long as they don't violate his standards.
Right. Because when we're doing that, what are we ultimately doing? We're letting our light shine. You see? So that people can see our good deeds and do what? What does he say there? Do what? And glorify God. You see? So, you know, we need to, again, as, you know, since we have been raised with Christ, this is the standard that we need to be living by, whatever station we find ourselves in. And look at what he says, top of chapter 4 here, because he goes right on to talking about the masters. All right, we've given instruction to slaves. Masters, provide your slaves with what is right and fair, because you know that you also have a master in heaven. Okay? So just substitute the word employer for master here. And does not the same thing apply? All right, Judy?
But the same thing applies to the worker. Too many times you see people that profess to be Christian, but yet their behavior towards whether it be fellow workers that are under them or whatever does not represent that they are Christians. Then, I mean, to me that's a sad thing.
Yeah.
Because you chose that job. You chose to work in that capacity. Therefore, you need to behave and be glad, first of all, that God gave you the opportunity to be in that job.
Yeah.
You know, too many people are without a job. But you need to behave so others do see you belong to Christ.
Yeah.
And you may preach the best sermon you ever preached on how you treat your fellow workers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's how we behave, again, in whatever capacity we find ourselves in.
Exactly.
You see? This is the role that God has put us in for His purpose, not ours, okay? And we need to serve Him, and we need to do whatever it is that we're supposed to do as we're serving Him. Okay? Brian? Yeah.
A lot of times we don't realize that we're here for a purpose to do the work.
Right. And it is His purpose that we are serving out, not ours. And we need to remember that, okay? We're here to serve out God's purpose, not our own.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we forget that too many times, and we, again, go back to, Brian, what you said at the beginning, it's all about me. It's not about you, okay? It's about God and His purpose. Remember a study, we've talked about this many times before, the movie about life is really, it's a movie about who?
God.
It's a movie about God. It's His movie. We have a small part that He, as the director, has put us into, and our role, we need to play our role as He has given it to us to do. And that includes these kind of instructions. He's put us there for that purpose. He's the director, so we need to do what He's told us to do. All right? Okay, thank you all. Next week we'll talk about some prayer. All right? Thank you.